TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Sea Shepherd, Ocean Protectors, Captain Paul Watson.
Nous avons des questions à vous poser concernant votre activité. Qu'est-ce que vous pouvez nous en dire?
I established the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in 1977 as an organization to intervene against poaching, against illegal activities on the high seas. So we're really an anti-poaching organization. And we intervene globally, and we do so with what I call aggressive nonviolence.
What is aggressive nonviolence?
Well, we're aggressive, but we never injure anybody. And in our entire 40-year experience, we've never caused a single injury to any person at all. But we have shut down numerous poaching operations from, you know, overfishing, whaling, shark killing, turtle killing. We've shut these things down through aggressive intervention, but at the same time being very careful not to injure anybody.
How do you imagine the ocean's future? From your point of view, will it be better or, on the contrary, worse?
Well, the future of the ocean is what we're seeing right now, which is an escalating diminishment of biodiversity. We've lost 90% of the fishes over the last 100 years. We've had a 40% diminishment in phytoplankton population since 1950. So there's some very serious situations that have been happening as far as a diminishment of biodiversity. The problem is most people are unaware of that. By 2048, according to Dr. Boris Worm of Dalhousie University and Dr. Daniel Pauly of the University of British Columbia, who are the two foremost oceanographic fishery scientists, there won't be any fishing industry in 2048 because there won't be any fish. There won't be any coral reefs. So what we're looking at is an ecological disaster within our oceans, and that doesn't bode well for the future of humanity, because as I always say, if the ocean dies, we die. We don't live on this planet with a dead ocean, and as the ocean is diminished, our ability to survive is diminished.
That was a clip from one of the last interviews Captain Paul Watson gave in France in June 2016. He's now free to travel again after living in exile in Paris for 2 years under the protection of the French government. He was wanted by Costa Rica. There he was accused of intervening to stop a Costa Rican ship that was illegally finning sharks in Guatemalan waters. And Japan asked for his arrest on conspiracy charges stemming from a Sea Shepherd campaign to stop Japan's illegal whaling in the Southern Ocean. Today, Paul Watson has his dual citizen passports back from the U.S. and from Canada. Paul Watson was co-founder of Greenpeace and led the campaign against the slaughter of baby seals in the late 70s. When Patrick Moore became president of Greenpeace Canada, he halted direct action and forced Watson out. Today, Patrick Moore is a spokesperson for Monsanto and the nuclear industry. Paul Watson never stopped his involvement in direct action. After his ouster from Greenpeace, he founded the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. It's an international, non-profit, marine wildlife conservation organization. Their mission is to end the destruction of habitat and the slaughter of wildlife in the world's oceans. Paul Watson is both praised and criticized for Sea Shepherd's practice of aggressive nonviolence. Watson says that some laws and conventions exist to protect the oceans and their inhabitants. However, these laws are very rarely enforced. He and his legal team make the case that non-governmental private organizations, such as Sea Shepherd, have the right to enforce international conservation laws in neutral waters. Sea Shepherd's crews have arrested poachers, removed illegal fishing nets, and chased vessels back into their home ports. They document their actions and collect and preserve evidence, turning that material over to authorities for prosecution. There are now many examples of Sea Shepherd assisting small nations that have no navy or coast guard to confront the international vessels that plunder their territorial waters. Of course, not all governments accept the enforcement power of Sea Shepherd, as is the case with Japan and Costa Rica. At the end of August 2016, Sea Shepherd launched the Ocean Warrior, the first ship fast enough to outrun the Japanese whaling fleet. Here are excerpts from a wide-ranging interview done in France in June 2016. You can see the whole hour on YouTube on the channel Climate State. The two French interviewers did not identify themselves, but their organization is ThinkerView.
Despite your fight, humanity does not measure the impact of losing biodiversity in oceans. So concretely, when are things going to change and how could it change?
For millions of years, the ocean has been the life support system of the planet. If you look at the Earth as a spaceship, which is traveling through space, which is what it is, every spaceship has a life support system. And it provides the food we eat, it regulates the temperature, controls the climate, and it provides the air that we breathe. And that life support system is to be found in the ocean. And that life support system is run by a crew, which are all these various species that make it work. We're not crew, we're passengers. We're having a great time entertaining ourselves. But what we're doing is killing off the crew, the phytoplankton that produces the oxygen, the whales that provide the nutrients for the phytoplankton, the interrelationship with all the species that keeps everything running and has kept everything running for millions of years. We're seriously compromising the efficiency of that life support system. And that's a very serious situation. 40% diminishment in phytoplankton population since 1950 is a serious situation that really nobody's aware of. Phytoplankton provides between 50 and 70 or possibly even 80% of all of the oxygen that we breathe, the rest coming from trees and plants. And if you remove phytoplankton, which is now seriously being depleted, then we simply will not have oxygen to breathe. And the relationship between phytoplankton and whales is that whales provide the nutrients for the phytoplankton, iron and nitrogen primarily, through the feces, similar to horse manure on providing fertilizer on a farm. So the whales are, in fact, the farmers of the ocean. But we don't, you know, we're not intelligent enough to really understand all of those interrelationships and the interdependence of all of those species. And as such, we're depleting that ability of the oceanic ecosystems to sustain life on this planet.
I'm sure you heard about the COP21, the Conference of Parties in Paris. Now, we're 6 months later. What is your feeling about these agreements? And do you think the conference pushed people and companies to realize the emergency of the situation?
Well, COP21 was a nothing event. Nothing came out of it. It was a great opportunity for all the world leaders to pat themselves on the back and do photo opportunities about how they're going to save the planet, but they didn't discuss anything of any relevance. I presented a booklet on solutions to climate change that nobody wants to hear, and they certainly didn't want to hear it, and they certainly didn't discuss it. And the fact is that if we want to protect this planet from the consequences of climate change, and one, we have to allow the ocean to repair itself. That means we have to stop all industrialized fishing operations. We have to stop subsidies on industrialized fishing operations. And unless we're willing to do that, the oceans are going to die. Another solution to that is that we have to switch to plant-based diets because we're killing 65 billion animals every year, and that's not counting the ones that we take out of the ocean. And the animal husbandry industry contributes more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere than the entire transportation industry, and also consumes more water, creates dead zones, and is one of the most serious causes of pollution, both in groundwater and in the ocean. But nobody really wants to address those solutions. They want to find answers that are, you know, that are acceptable, that don't affect our lifestyle. And at the same time, governments want to find solutions through taxation. They figure that this is a good opportunity to tax everybody in order to bring that money. But as I found on environmental taxes throughout the world, is that when they're collected, they don't go towards solving the problem. They basically go to what governments usually spend their money on, which is wasting it on ridiculous things like defense or subsidies or their own payrolls.
Is France involved on green issues or completely blind?
Well, France is no different than any other country, which means that France, like all these other countries, is doing nothing to address the real problems. But just on the oceans, for example, France controls the second largest maritime territory on the planet. The French Navy is in a wonderful opportunity to enforce against illegal fishing operations, but they don't do very much. And I've actually spoken to the admiral of the French Navy, and he agrees, but he said that their hands are tied politically.
Your organization, Sea Shepherd, suffered some criticism. For instance, your lack of tolerance towards poor population activities. For example, you made a campaign in La Réunion to protect sharks. And in fact, the local population was puzzled because it was a question of dozens of sharks, while French vessels fish thousands of tons of sharks every year, and there is no campaign there. So do you accept and understand these criticisms?
First, on the first question, we don't target anybody who doesn't act illegally. So I don't really care if people are rich or poor. If they're breaking the law, we're going to oppose them. But what we're primarily doing is going against large corporate fishing operations. I mean, we're talking about multi-million dollar corporations that are literally looting the oceans. Right now, we have one of our vessels working in partnership with the government of Gabon to stop illegal fishing in Gabonese waters. Last week, we arrested three Chinese vessels that were operating that water illegally. Last month, we chased six illegal Chinese drift netters all the way from the Indian Ocean back to China and turned them over to the Chinese government with the evidence of illegal activity. We're working in partnership with the Mexican Navy to save the endangered vaquita. And yes, those are poor fishermen who are going after this vaquita, but they're doing it illegally. So we seized 25 long lines and about 42 illegally set gill nets, and we confiscated those. You can't use poverty as an excuse for this kind of lawbreaking. Otherwise, it would be certainly quite all right for people to sell cocaine because they're poor. It's certainly all right to rob banks because they're poor. So if you look at the ocean as a bank that contains the savings or the investment for the future of all humanity, then the poachers are no different than bank robbers. Oh, and then on the question of La Reunion, every year, the average number of people killed by sharks is 7. Which is amazing when you consider that every day about 300 million people go into the ocean. So, your chances of getting killed by a shark are pretty, pretty small. In fact, it's more dangerous to play golf. If you're out golfing, your chances of being struck by lightning or being stung by a bee and dying are greater, and more people die on golf courses every year than are attacked by sharks. We need sharks. They have shaped evolution in our ocean for 450 million years. They are an apex predator, and they're essential for the ecological integrity of the ocean. Therefore, there is no excuse for killing them. The problem is the three places in the world where shark attacks are more prevalent are Queensland, Western Australia, and La Reunion Island. And what do those three places have in common? They have shark kill programs. That is, they're culling sharks and funded by the government to do that. Now, what does that do? Sharks are territorial creatures. Therefore, when you go in and you kill sharks in an area, you create a vacuum which draws more sharks into that area. And those sharks are by nature territorial, and become very aggressive as a jockey for position within that territory. Therefore, those programs in La Reunion, Queensland, and Western Australia are creating aggressive sharks. And therefore, the responsibility for the shark attacks now becomes the people who are killing the sharks. The government of France, in fact, is contributing to those shark attacks. And as for the surfers who complain about this, on our advisory board, we are fortunate to have Kelly Slater, who's the probably the foremost surfer in the world. And I think Kelly's advice to the surfers at La Reunion was quite appropriate. He said, if you're afraid of sharks, then stay out of the ocean. You don't belong there.
What is your feeling about the young generation? Do you think they care about the situation, that they understand, or on the contrary, that they gave up?
Well, there's a lot of all of that. Younger people are certainly far more aware today than 20, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, back in 1972, nobody even knew what the word ecology meant. And certainly people were blind to the real problems. So I think young people are far more aware now. Are they involved? Yes, people are distracted by everything from video games to entertainment or whatever. But I do see a level of involvement probably greater than any time in previous history. And young people actually face a very daunting challenge that other generations before them didn't have to deal with. And that challenges the fact that this might not be a livable planet at the end of this century. I happen to believe that when you face an impossible situation and overwhelming odds, you have to find impossible solutions. And I believe those solutions can be found, again, through imagination, passion, and courage. And I'm seeing more and more of that in young people. We have 9 ships. On those ships right now, we have about 125 volunteers from 20 or 25 different nations. It all depends. And so we have thousands of people who want to participate. So there's certainly, I'm seeing the passion of people who want to get involved. And they want to get involved because when they join our vessels, they can actually get the satisfaction of seeing results for their efforts. They go down, they shut down an illegal fishing operation, or they save X number of whales, or they save X number of turtles on the beaches in, say, Costa Rica. These are real results, and therefore it gives people not only the satisfaction of doing it, but also the encouragement that they can do more. Because I believe that everybody has the ability to change things, to change the world, and that we encourage that individual initiative, that individual an individual imagination to find those solutions. You know, I find that one person championing one cause makes a difference. Because of Diane Fossey, Mountain Gorillas are survived in Rwanda. The work of Jane Goodall and Bruti Geltikos when she's protecting orangutans in Indonesia. These are examples of individuals who make a difference because of their passion. One man in Bermuda, David Wingate, because of him, the Bermuda storm petrel didn't go extinct. And so I encourage people all over the world when they come to me and they say, well, I'm really concerned about, you know, say, protecting jaguars in Belize. I said, well, then do that. You know, do whatever you can. Use your imagination and find ways to get involved and do things like that. So this is what we try to do, is encourage people to follow their own passions.
Soon there will be a presidential election in the U.S. For you, who could be the best candidate to defend green issues?
There isn't one. There isn't one. That's like trying to choose between, you know, cholera and smallpox, really. The problem is that the United States is not a democracy. It's an oligarchy, and they already choose the president before anybody gets to vote. I personally was backing Bernie Sanders, and I believe that he would have won if they didn't rig the election against him. And also the media refused to cover them because the media is controlled by the same people who control the corporations who decide who's going to be president. And so you're not going to really get any democratic representation in a country where the corporations have the final say. And that's pretty much true of everything. For instance, Justin Trudeau came to Paris 1 month after being elected as Prime Minister of Canada.
Justin Trudeau from Canada?
Yeah. And he was all gung-ho. He's going to really do something about climate change. I mean, he's very idealistic, and he brought in about 150 people with him, and they all sat down, and they were very, very serious, and then he went home. But he had only been Prime Minister for a month. So when he went home, the people who really control things must have sat him down and talked to him, because now he's supporting the pipeline. He's supporting the tar sands project. He's saying that the fires that they had in Alberta are not connected with climate change. So he's becoming like everybody else. It's basically because they're just puppets who are told what to do. We don't have any world leaders. We basically have puppets controlled by the corporations who actually control everything. The mining companies, the logging companies, the big fishing companies, the nuclear power companies. They're the ones that control everything. And this so-called voting is just a charade. That's why we never get anybody who actually does anything.
Have you seen the so-called the Seventh Continent or Great Pacific Garbage Patch?
I know what you're talking about. We've had a plastic campaign now for years. It's called the Vortex Project. Exactly. And what we do is we have beach cleanups around the world. We collect tons and tons of plastic from around the world and send that in for recycling. We ship it off to a central place to be recycled. Last year, we brought in 72 kilometers, 70 tons of gill net from the Southern Ocean and had that turned into shoes. We're also looking for alternatives to plastic. So it's a combination of cleaning up plastic, discouraging the use of plastic, and finding alternatives to plastic. It's a big project for Sea Shepherd.
What is your feeling about Fukushima?
Well, Fukushima is something that people don't really want to talk about because...
I want to talk about
it. Yeah, I know. But in general, they don't want to talk about it because there's no solutions to it. The Japanese are trying to cover up the damage, but the damage is extreme, and it will continue to be extreme. Radioactive water is seeping into the groundwater below Tokyo. They're dumping it into the ocean. We're seeing the effects of this in fish off the coast of California and certainly in Alaska. It's a major, major tragedy that's been downplayed by the world media. But the problem with it is that how do you deal with it? You can't really clean it up. But what it does herald is the similar situation happening in other places in the world. And in only just one generation, really, we've had two, almost three, major nuclear accidents. And that doesn't bode well for the future of nuclear power worldwide.
What do you think about French nuclear politics?
I'm certainly opposed to nuclear power plants. Our entire population worldwide depends on fossil fuels. You know, people think that nuclear power is clean. It isn't. It actually is very intensive use of fossil fuels because to make one ounce of uranium, you need 1,000 tons of pitch blende ore, which means that you have to mine it, you have to crush it, you have to manufacture it, you have to transport it. The amount of fossil fuels used in the nuclear industry alone almost exceeds that used in oil and coal-fired generating plants. So it's not clean energy. That's a fantasy that it's clean energy. But the problem really is too much energy consumption by too many people producing too many products which are essentially of no use at all. We really have to cut down on useless products. We have to find ways of stopping human population growth in a responsible manner.
What is your opinion about that?
The population will not grow beyond 12 billion. That's the limit because it'll crash before then. The planet simply cannot
Sustain
12 billion people. It's not going to happen. And that's going to happen before the end of this century. It's going to crash. There are no easy solutions, but solutions have to be found. And I think that we also really have to concentrate on lowering our levels of consumption of materials. And instead of third world nations trying to become first world nations should be looking at lowering ourselves to a lower level of consumption.
You know peak oil?
Peak oil,
yeah. What is your opinion about it? It's a theory, it's a what?
Well, it's a finite resource. It's going to crash. And right now, we're already seeing utilization of fracking and other technologies to extract less and less of what's available. And so the problem with oil is it's a drug. And our entire civilization is dependent upon that drug.
We are junkies.
We are oil junkies, and like junkies, we'll do anything to get it. And if that means destroying the planet we live on to get it, we're going to do it. And if that means killing people in third world nations, if it means destroying our ocean, we're going to do it because we're dependent upon that drug. I mean, look at the wars that we're fighting right now over it. By 2030, we'll be probably in a major war over the Antarctic continent because that's the last untapped reserve of not just oil, but also cobalt and other coal, for instance, 200 meter seams of coal going through the transantarctic mountains. It's untouched right now, but they'll go for it. And when they do, you're going to see major military adventures in Antarctica. So the wars of the 21st century will be wars over resources. And not just, you know, oil, but also water. We're going to have some very serious conflicts over water availability.
So in a certain way, global warming help big corporation to find oil in Antarctica?
Oh, yeah, well, it's going to make it easier. It's making it easier to exploit oil in the Arctic. It's also going to open up fisheries. It's going to open up. They see all of the benefits. That's what they actually say. Well, you know, you environmentalists, you see that the glass is half empty. We see it as half full. We see global warming as something that is going to help us economically. And that might be so for a brief period of time, but it's going to destroy us ecologically. I mean, we're seeing evidence of global warming around us all the time, or of climate change, and yet still the major mainstream media is denying that it's a real problem. It is a real problem. It's going to be increasingly more of a problem.
There is an increasing number of people that have chosen to be vegetarian, flexi-vegetarian or vegan. Do you think that changing our eating habits helps to fight for saving the planet and its biodiversity?
I absolutely do believe that. My ships have been vegan vessels since 2000 and vegetarian vessels since 1980 because I believe that we have to set an example, that we can't save the world by being part of the problem. 40% of all of the fish taken out of the ocean is fed to pigs and chickens and to farm-raised salmon. When you eat a hamburger, you're actually eating a fish. So we're literally eating the oceans alive. We're killing 65 billion animals every year on factory farms around the world. We're feeding more fish to, you know, for instance, to our chickens and are being eaten by albatrosses and puffins. Pigs are eating more fish than all the seals in the North Atlantic. I mean, this is just completely unnatural behavior. And I do believe that the humanity can sustain itself quite healthily on plant-based diets. They produce use less water, produce less greenhouse gases, are less of a source of pollution than animal products. So yeah, that we very much promote that. But we do it for environmental reasons. There's many ways that people promote veganism. It's ethical or for their health, but we do it for environmental reasons.
What is your opinion about the no growing?
Well, you know, no species has ever survived on this planet outside of the three basic laws of ecology. The first is the law of diversity. The strength of an ecosystem is with diversity within it. The second is the law of interdependence, that the species within that ecosystem are dependent upon each other. And the third is the law of finite resources. There's a limit to growth, a limit to carrying capacity. What we humans are doing right now is stealing the carrying capacity of other species. They have to disappear to make room for more and more of us. But what that does is diminish interdependence and diversity, which can lead to a collapse of the entire system. Civilization will cease to exist. We may go extinct. It's quite simple because we cannot survive without oxygen. We cannot survive without food. And we cannot survive with runaway climate change. So we don't survive. That's really what the final consequences are. The only way we're going to survive is to learn to live in harmony with all the other citizen species on this planet. We have to appreciate and understand the role that they play, the role that whales play, the role that fish play, the role that birds play. They all contribute to this life support system. We can't continue to act like we're the only species that matter.
That was an interview with Captain Paul Watson, founder and CEO of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. He was commander on seven different Sea Shepherd ships since 1978. He continues to lead Sea Shepherd campaigns to protect defenseless marine wildlife around the world. He's also a prolific writer and author. His published titles include Sea Shepherd, My Fight for Whales and Seals, Cry Wolf, Ocean Warrior, and Seal Wars. Thanks to the French organization ThinkerView for the audio of their June 22, 2016 film, Paul Watson Talks Climate. You can see the one-hour version on YouTube on the channel of Climate State. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.